You're too damn white, guys.
Welcome back to another Too Damn White Guys. I'm Julian Smith.
I'm Andrew Rader.
And there's no music in this intro because we are predicting this will be the worst episode in Too Damn White Guys history. And we have decided to guarantee that that is actually the case. So there's no music.
Wait, we're not putting music in?
No, there will be no music in this episode.
Ah, that's pretty lame.
Well, I think we got to lean into the fact that this is the worst episode ever. So I think that means there's no music. I was talking to my wife about this just today. She was like, what are you recording today? And I was like, Nuance. It's an episode on Nuance, and we're predicting it's the worst episode ever. And she was like, what? And I think it's like the best way. Why don't you take an attempt to describe what we're going to talk about, Andrew?
People like stories. People like stories. They like interesting things that are different. And people kind of also have trouble with uncertainty. So I think nuance has a lot to do with uncertainty. Can you keep uncertainty in your mind, or do you need to think about one idea? And this drives a lot of things, especially in America, but all over the world, in politics and the way the media works. The media grasps onto stories. And I think a story is, by definition, something that's different. You could tell a story about, you know, I woke up and I ate breakfast and I went to work and stuff, but it's not a very interesting story because it's not different. We don't tell stories about airplanes because they've been flying for 100 years. So there's not news stories about this amazing flying machine that went up in the air and carried hundreds of people through the sky, because people are only interested in the novel, the new, not just the amazing things that happens all the time.
The reason this came up for me this week was because I was talking to a buddy of mine about our last episode on pornography. And my friend was like, my friend Dave, if you're listening, he said, you know, I was kind of expecting something more controversial. I was kind of expecting you guys to tell people that they should all watch a bunch of porn or something, and you didn't. And
or not watch porn.
Or to not watch porn. He said, I kind of expected you guys to take a stance on it, and you didn't. And he said, when I turned the episode off at the end, he said something about how he felt like it was probably the healthiest way we could have approached it, but how he found himself wishing something inside him made him want to hear something more bold from us. And he was like, I wonder why that was. And so I was thinking about this nuance thing. And I think it really is, my prediction is that this is really just Americans that respond to nuance this way. I'm betting that in other countries, like in specifically the more socialist countries, that they're probably able to embrace nuance a little better, maybe get their heads around it, because they're not just like, I don't know what it is. I don't know why Americans want to be polarized so much. Like by the news, like you just want to bash. If you're a Republican, you want to bash the Democrats. If you're a Democrat, you want to bash Republicans. And if, you know, but I feel like a lot of Americans are probably actually somewhere in the middle, and that you just never hear from them because they're never talking, because they're like more of a nuanced stance. And what do you think about that?
That's definitely true. Yeah, actually, most American voters identify as moderate. It's low 50s%, but just over half of Americans identify as moderates, but only 4% of politicians, I think. I saw this article in The Atlantic about this. Only 4% of politicians identify as moderate because politicians are trying to tell a story. They're trying to get elected, so they want to have a very strong platform that differentiates themselves from other politicians. So they need to be out there. They need to be out there with a message, which tends to push them left or right, rather than in the middle. But most voters are kind of somewhere in the middle. But this is really true with media. Like, you have the most popular media sources are pretty right-wing, like Fox News, or pretty left-wing, like MSNBC. But the ones in the middle are just kind of boring. Like, who watches CNN, right? My favorite news, though, by the way, which I watch pretty much every day, is PBS NewsHour. Because it's pretty moderate. It's, like, really good. Just tells you the facts. No spin. No interpretation. I can interpret things for myself. It just kind of tells you what happened.
Yeah, I think I love PBS. I feel like the reason this is so important is because if people are unable to appreciate nuance, then when they're watching something or they're listening to something or they're voting for a president or whatever it is, they're just gonna go after what makes them feel the biggest feeling, you know?
People respond to feelings. They don't really think, they feel. Right? And we think an idea.
And that's a problem.
Grasp onto something. It's hard to maintain lots of ideas and competing ideas in your head and saying, well, some of these have a little bit of truth and this one's a little bit true and this one's a little bit true. And they all kind of fit together to make this complex story. And man, now I'm just tired and confused. I just want someone to tell me what the truth is.
Yeah.
By the way, though, we should jump into Andrew Tell's Julie in the News.
Oh, yeah. You got to tell me about the news. Why don't we go to the news for a minute?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We'll go to the news. Yeah. All right. So... music?
Here it goes.
Oh.
It's all you.
Yeah. Okay. So Hawaii considers raising the legal smoking age to 100.
So they why don't they just make it illegal?
Well, I think it's harder than just raising the age. So it's pretty easy to tweak the age, but it's hard to make it illegal.
I wonder how many people in Hawaii are actually 100 or over.
There's a few old cigar aficionados on the beach.
That is a hilarious
law. Well, that doesn't affect me.
Yeah. All right, what else?
Yeah. So voters in a town in northwest Germany have delivered a resolution saying that they want to continue to have no street names. There are no street names, no numbers. They just kind of describe where you're going. So take that street to the left and then that one to the right and stop at the big church.
Those Germans and their traditions. We got to watch out for them. I'm joking.
So an artist named Max Siedentopf has installed speakers and sound system that will continuously play Toto's down in Africa in the Namib Desert forever.
The band?
Yeah, Toto's? Africa,
yeah.
Rains of Africa or whatever.
Oh. Yeah.
Rains down in Africa.
this is a publicity stunt.
Yeah. Publicity stunt. It's art, actually. It's not publicity stunt. It's art.
It's art, yeah.
But it will continuously play Toto's down in Africa forever, which is interesting because the Namib Desert is one of the driest places on Earth.
Oh.
So it's going to continuously talk about the rains of Africa down in the driest desert.
I wonder if Toto is going to get royalties off that. Probably not.
Yeah, it's a good question. Performance. I think they must have given permission. Yeah.
Yeah. They
are they still around? I mean, are they still alive?
They're still collecting royalty checks.
Are they? Yeah.
They have to be. Music. Their grandchildren are going to be collecting royalty checks. Mm-hmm.
A 3-year-old in North Carolina who went missing was recently found after 2 days. And he told his parents that he was hanging out with a bear.
Wait, how old was this kid?
3 years old, I think.
Okay. So, that's actually kind of scary. I wonder what he was actually doing.
Yeah. Maybe there was a bear.
I'm sure his parents were like, no, what really happened?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow, that's scary stuff.
And the big real news is AOC released just the template, I guess, or the outline for the new Green Deal. And conservatives are going crazy, and Democrats are feeling like they definitely need to endorse this. So a lot of the candidates are doing that, like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and all Elizabeth Warren and stuff. They're all jumping on this. So yeah, I'm in too.
So this is some kind of eco-friendly environmental deal, I guess?
Yeah, basically it's this outline which wants to convert the U.S. to all renewable energies by 2030. Yeah, it includes a lot of provisions for like guaranteed jobs and all kinds of like really socialist stuff too.
Wow.
So Fox News is just losing their minds over this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to be honest, I think like there's probably a lot of pork in it that doesn't necessarily need to be there. That's not really related to climate change. So yeah, I think it goes a bit too far. Although I think that it's, you know, a noble goal to convert the U.S. to renewable energy.
Now, let me guess, they want Mexico to pay for it.
Yeah. Actually, Canada probably this time.
So America's like, other countries will take care of our problems. The world will fix itself.
Yeah. How's that going anyway?
Yeah, that's crazy.
But actually, I thought that was topical because we're talking about nuance, and this is kind of like a really big thrust from the very liberal side of the Democratic Party, right? Mm-hmm. So it's trying to make a message. It's saying, this is our stance, and we're dead serious about it, and it's way out there. Right. And that's because it captures attention. That's why AOC captures a lot of attention. Bernie Sanders captured a lot of attention, whereas Clinton was like this nice old lady who's pretty moderate. And, you know, she didn't capture attention. Well, she did from conservatives, the wrong kind of attention, but she didn't really excite Democrats. And this is the thing in politics where you don't have a lot of moderate politicians, but you do have a lot of moderate voters. And I always think that the parties on both sides should probably nominate someone sort of in the middle, because then they'll maybe capture some of the other voters, or they'll respond to people who are kind of in the middle. But it's never, I don't know if it's actually a good strategy. I think that most people think it's not a good strategy, because the strategy should be to so-called ignite your base and get people really excited. Because elections are usually decided on voter turnout. So if you get people excited about a candidate and tell a story, then they'll come out and vote for people. Whereas if it's just kind of like, well, I think we're doing a good job and we're just kind of continue it and people are going to be, people are fine now. Basically, things are fine. If that's politicians' message, then they're not going to get elected. But that's pretty much the truth. I mean, there's definitely room for improvement all the time. But every politician has to talk about how we're going to come in and make huge changes and things are on the wrong track and we want to go all the way over here and we're over here now and we got to get all the way over here. We have so much work to do. And because it tells a story, right? A story is, by definition, change.
Well, here's the problem with stories. The problem with stories, they make, it's a great source of entertainment, but stories in real life, it's not always a direct, it's not an accurate translation, because, you know, a story requires two opposing forces, one good, one evil, and that's just the nature of stories. And I don't think everything always works that way in the real world. I think there's a lot of nuance, which is, I guess, why we decided to choose nuance as a topic, but, you know, it's not always one thing versus the other. And there's a lot of variables. And I think people respond to stories because it's a lot simpler than taking all those variables into consideration and trying to figure out which side of the, you know, where they stand in the issue and how they feel about it personally. It's a lot less work to just listen to a story and get riled up by whatever the person you resonate with is saying. And whoever's story you respond to the most, they get, you know, they get your attention, they get your vote, they get your whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be really meta, we're telling a story right now that stories are bad and you should actually consider facts and data and try to weigh different uncertainties.
But our story is that this is the worst one we've ever told.
So, yeah, but I think it's because people have trouble maintaining uncertainty in their mind, right? Like, it's easy to think one thing or the other, but to think something in between is really tough. Like, you know, people want to take a stance on everything. And I think this is why religion really exists. It's because back in the day, you know, when we were hunter-gatherers and then early primitive agriculturalists, we didn't know a lot of things. We didn't know what the planets were and what the sun was doing and why it comes up and why it gets cold in the winter and, you know, all the forces of the universe and what the stars are and where water comes from and why we're born and why we die and everything like that. So we can't handle the uncertainty of not knowing, so we made up a bunch of stories. And people cling to these stories today, and people cling to all kinds of stories. It's not just about religion, but it's politics and it's literal stories. Like, people love fiction.
Well, there's a lot of great stories.
To a lot of people, Harry Potter is real.
There's a lot of great stories, you know.
That's what makes us human, really, is stories.
Even some of the religious ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're important parts of our culture, and, you know, they explain a lot about us. And they actually are pretty relevant today, especially with things. I find, like, if you look at Greek mythology and stories from Greek mythology, they're so relevant today. Although they were kind of like, they're like HBO, though, with sex and violence. There's so much sex and violence in Greek stories.
I think that there's a lot of those stories, especially the religious ones and a lot of the mythology leaning stories. We respond to them because they're stories that make sense of our surroundings and our impulses, and they kind of give us guidance. And I think that you know, this is why Jesus taught in parables, you know, because they were effective ways of communicating, you know, and people understood them. And, you know, he was famous for his ability to get points across, and I think it's because he did it in stories. And I think that I don't want anybody to think that we're saying we should get rid of stories or that we should, you know, think stories are bad. But I think that they're just a bad, it's a bad source of education. And I think people could stand to educate themselves on, you know, the world is becoming really complicated and we got a lot of problems to figure out. And I think there's a lot of people that just get overwhelmed by all the details and they'd rather pick a side based on a story than the actual information that's there, because it would be way too time consuming to go through everything and, you know, make a decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Story is a simplified way of understanding the world. It's like a one paragraph summary or something like that. It's like one thing you can remember, a takeaway message. Mm-hmm. I always really loved Hamlet. That was my favorite story.
Oh, in
high school, I basically memorized all of Hamlet, and I was kind of
really
notorious for being able to recite all the parable or the soliloquies, like his. I thought Hamlet was the best character ever. And he was, because he was racked with uncertainty. He never knew what to do. That's like what Hamlet is. He just prevaricates and he never does anything the whole story. And things just unfold before him. And he's like, I don't know. Like, should I kill myself or not? To be or not to be, right?
Right.
And eventually
right.
makes no decision and he dies. And that's kind of like humanity. But I think I really related to that because I'm like, yeah, well, what decision should he have made?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's
Hamlet's
just a story.
Like the hero of uncertainty.
Yeah, exactly. That is a great yeah. story. We're gonna take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise. This is actually why I wanted to start a podcast, one where I could learn about the world, and because I found myself like really unsure about the things I was hearing about in the world, and I didn't know where I stood, you know, and people, I have very diverse group of friends, and I heard, you know, one group of friends saying the answers are these answers, and mm-hmm. another group of friends would say they were different answers, and I realized really quickly, I was like, oh, these are really complex issues. I wish I knew mm-hmm. more, and I realized that I had to learn, and so I started started this podcast as a place to be able to talk to experts in different areas and like figure out what other like really smart people think about things. And it's been a really enriching experience for me. And now I feel like having been doing this for a year, that I actually have some opinions on things, and I feel like so grateful that I've taken the time to educate myself and I think it's so rewarding. I wish more people would not be so daunted, because it really is. It can be very fun.
Yeah, definitely. It's hard to do, though. It's hard to maintain, withhold judgment, which is also funny because we did the personality test, and I guess I am certainly judgmental, and I think you are too.
Yeah.
But it's strange that as a judgmental person, I still think we shouldn't necessarily judge things.
Yeah, me too.
Or tell stories. Yeah, right? I mean, my judgment is kind of that we shouldn't judge things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's okay to make assessments, but like you don't have to always.
I guess it's fine to judge things. It's fine to make assessments. It's that usually things aren't so simple as one thing or the other. Most truths are kind of gray, in the gray zone. It's like 80% true, 90% true, 70% true. But it's most things kind of have but attached to them, right? And so you got to try to keep those in mind because things aren't so straightforward as they seem. Mm-hmm. But why is uncertainty? And I think the root of this storytelling and jumping to conclusions and trying to hold on to one story is a result of uncertainty being very uncomfortable. But why do you think uncertainty is very uncomfortable?
Well, I think that people are insecure. I think that we're smart enough to know all the stuff that we don't know, and not knowing things drives us crazy.
Yeah, but why? Like, what in evolution would cause uncertainty to be difficult? Because there's some really funny studies that show.
I think it's reptilian. I think it's our reptilian mind.
It probably is. But there's a lot of studies that show that uncertainty about something bad happening, for example, is much worse, much more anxiety provoking than the bad thing happening. Meaning most people would rather like just get into a car accident, presumably a non-fatal one, then think about the possibility of getting into it, like or be worried that there's a chance, right? They've done a lot of experiments where people get like electric shocks, and the most in getting the electric shocks themselves I mean, yeah, it kind of hurts, but not that bad. But people anticipating the electric shocks, especially when they're random, and it's much worse when they're randomly distributed,
yeah,
that is really anxiety provoking.
I think this is why this is why horror movies have become such a huge genre, because people know they can go into a movie theater and it's safe, but they're going to be terrified.
And it's also way worse when you don't see the monster in a horror movie, right?
Yeah,
like Jaws was such a brilliant movie because they couldn't get the damn mechanical shark to work. Yeah. So they ended up having to film most of the movie without a shark.
Yeah.
Jaws has very little shark time in it. It has like 2 minutes of sharks and it's all at the end. Most of it's just like, oh my gosh,
the
music's coming. And is there a shark? Who knows?
What's funny is now that's a storytelling rule. Like you never show the whole monster.
Right.
But it was an accident.
And no shark is better than shark. And it almost kind of makes sense to some extent, because if there's no obvious shark, then there's a shark everywhere.
Everything's a shark. Yeah.
Everything could be a shark if nothing is a shark. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But animals too also have this uncertainty. And this has been around for a long time, that uncertainty is just far worse for pretty much people. Probably has always been this way.
Yeah.
Than knowledge of bad things.
Well, that's why I think it's
crazy.
That's why I think it's our reptilian mind, because, you know, our reptilian mind keeps us afraid of things so that we don't die. And I think fear is actually a healthy motivator in a ton of situations, but, you know, because it can inspire you to go learn. It can inspire you to look over your shoulder and make sure there's not a shark. You know, it can be a really healthy motivator, but, you know, I think it's the anxiety of uncertainty is definitely reptilian.
Yeah, it keeps you locked in the cycle of grief, so you can't actually pass through the cycle to acceptance, right? So if you're going to be late or something for a really important meeting, if you don't know if you're going to be late, it's way worse for anxiety than being late, because if you're just going to be late, you're like, well, I'm late. Just sit back and accept it, right? And just do what I can do about it. But if you're maybe late, you're on the cusp and you're like, I'm going to be late or not, that's apparently a lot worse for anxiety.
Huh. Interesting. According to studies, there's studies on this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting. I believe that. This is also roller coasters. I mean, it's not just horror movies. It's roller coasters.
Yeah, I hate roller coasters so much.
Well, but roller coasters are actually kind of dangerous. A horror movie is way safer.
No, they're not dangerous.
Oh, people die on roller coasters, definitely.
Very infrequently.
Yeah, they make you throw up. They can make you puke your guts out.
Yeah.
I actually like roller coasters, but I did not at one point in time. I had to overcome that fear. But I think that's why people like them. I think it's anticipation.
Yeah.
And
definitely anticipation is way more powerful than the actual event. This is true in both negative and positive things. And I guess that has a lot to do with the uncertainty and why people have trouble maintaining different stories. I mean, it just requires a lot more mental resources, because if you know something bad is going to happen or has happened, you can take steps, you know, to mitigate it as best you can, or just like accept it and say, well, effort. Like, you know, it's just, there's nothing I can do. You've lost control and that's fine. You can accept the loss of control. But if it may happen, you're kind of thinking through all these, you're become obsessed with thinking through the different possibilities. So it just requires much more mental resources. That's probably a good reason why it's, why uncertainty is harder to deal with.
So what do we know about nuance in other countries and how it looks? Are other countries, like, are socialist countries, like Canada, Scandinavia, Norway, do they have news that's super polarized like we do in America, or is it more like PBS?
I think less so. I haven't seen any studies on this, but from my personal experience with
news, I mean, you grew Canada, up in Canada.
And, I grew up in Canada. And my mom always talks about news in the U.S. is so polarized and also very insular, like doesn't talk about other countries. Like, how do I find out what's happening around the world, right?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Most American news devotes very, very little time to anything happening outside the U.S.'s borders. And America's 5% of the world's population, so you would think it's warranted to talk about the rest of the world a little bit.
Well, all you have to do is talk to an American for 5 minutes to discover they know nothing about planet Earth.
Yeah, that's true.
They know a lot about America.
It's funny because in Canada, you get so much news from the United States. Like half of the news is about the, like, about America, basically. But in the United States, you get nothing practically about Canada. I mean, yeah, it makes sense, just the disparity of population and economies and stuff like that. But still, it's exaggerated far more than that. So I think that there is something to that. Definitely the media in the U.S. is pretty polarized. There are some other places where it's like state controlled, so it's much worse. Like in Russia, like there literally is only basically Fox News, and it's like state run, basically. So it's not just Sean Hannity talking to Trump. It's literally they take their orders from Putin.
Wow.
But many countries like Scandinavia, certainly, and Canada, I think have more nuanced news. I wouldn't say it's even very nuanced, because kind of the purpose of news, the definition is something that's new, therefore something that's different from normal, right? But definitely in America, news is pretty polarized. I think it's part of the American story. So I think like America came about by a revolution of people who were upset with their situation, you know, being ruled by Britain, where Britain was so a very, for the times, Britain was like the most modern, the most free, the most liberal country in the world. Like if you had asked anyone on earth just before the revolution, what is like the most free liberal democracy country on earth? It would have been Britain. And so it's kind of bizarre
that makes so much sense.
Most free country is the one that the people rebel against and say, hey, we want to get out of this. We want to get out of this wonderfully prospering economically, this free liberal democracy. We want out.
You're so right. It's like the two-party system is literally an exact implementation. It's like one side is Britain and the other side is America. And like when you turn on the news during an election, all you hear is, oh, well, all these problems we're having are due to the Republicans being in the office for the last 4 years.
Totally.
Or it's the Democrats. It's just a bunch of finger pointing. It's not actually what are the policies that are causing these problems? How do we, you know, distribute things in a way? How do we run things more efficiently? None of that. You only hear, oh, it's the Democrats or it's the Republicans.
Yeah, but even the story of how we tell ourselves about the American Revolution is pretty polarized. Like we talk about the Yankees, the Patriots, right? Even the New England football team, the Patriots, like their whole motto or their uniform and their mascot. Whereas the reality wasn't so simple. Many Americans were moderate at the time and didn't really care to pick sides in the revolution. Many Americans, meaning colonists in America, supported the British. There was at least one battle, several battles, I think, which contained no British troops. It was Americans versus Americans, basically loyalists, Americans who supported the crown versus Americans who wanted to break free. So it wasn't very simple. Even within families, some like brothers supported one side versus the other. Like a lot, there was a lot of support for actually remaining within Britain, and also a massive swath of the country that just didn't care. That didn't want to get involved and didn't care whether we break, like whether America declares independence or whatever. But you hear about the revolution from a very polarized standpoint, that it's like, yay, America, patriotism, patriots trying to break free from oppressive Britain and trying to found a country based on liberty and whatever. So the story is polarized too. And I think that's, it's the American story is all about polarization and stories and differentiating themselves from the British initially and then other people too. So it's, yeah, it's interesting. It's very part of the American fabric to have kind of a very direct polarized story on one side or the other.
Yeah. Stories are too simple. Stories are too simple for the problems that we're facing on this. The whole world is facing these problems, not just America, but America as a major world leader. I don't even know if to call them a leader. A world leader is accurate, but just like whatever America is, they're one of the biggest countries, and there's a huge responsibility on the part of Americans, since so much is dependent on voters. There's a huge responsibility on Americans to be educated and to be voting well and to know what they're voting on. And I think a lot of people don't want to do the work, but stories are too simple. And as long as people continue to vote based on stories, I think we're going to keep having problems. What do you think it's going to take?
Sound bites. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know, but education is very important. I think there should be civics classes. I think that there's a lot of things that you know, you don't learn until you leave school, and you really probably should, like how to do your taxes. Like what is taxes? How do taxes work? How do you vote? It's super tough to get people to pay attention to issues and actually understand the information behind the issues. Like even we had this episode and we talked about the wall a little bit a few weeks ago. I don't actually know perfectly where I stand on that. You kind of assume that I'd be totally against it, but I don't have enough information to actually make a really good judgment. I mean, I'm sort of against the idea of like a full wall all across the border because I think it's probably not the most efficient way to do it and stuff like that. But
that's
I'm not
how I
necessarily
feel.
Opposed to like a mild expansion in certain areas. We basically already have some sections of wall. So maybe it makes sense that maybe it would relieve some burden from officers who otherwise have to patrol it, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know that the wall is completely stupid, but I think the rallying cry of we must have a wall no matter what is an overly simplified story that borders on a little silly. Right?
Yeah. I didn't think you were pro or anti wall. I kind of figured you had a, we've never talked about it at length, but I kind of figured that's how you felt about it. That's how I feel about it too. I don't think it's a terrible idea. I just think it's probably not the best use of all of this money that Trump wants for it. It seems like maybe it's just like maybe not the best use, the best way to keep people out that shouldn't be here, like terrorists and things. Is I think it's airports mainly. So
yeah, it is. That's true. The other thing is people slam politicians for flip-flopping, right? For changing their views on issues.
Changing their story.
Well, yeah, but to me that's like a mark of maturity, or maybe they have new information now. So maybe 10 years ago they thought one thing and now 10 years later they think something else. Well, I actually would prefer someone who thinks about it and is able to make decisions based on the available information that they have rather than someone who digs in their heels and won't change their opinions no matter what. Like, isn't it better to have someone who actually considers it? Maybe they've made a smart decision because new information has presented itself.
Yeah, exactly. I think the same thing. I think it's so true.
Although, I mean, obviously politicians are often criticized for flip-flopping to just garner support to
I think there's a lot of that happening
and
too.
There is also a lot of that going on. That's true. Yeah.
So education is a solution for stories. What else do you think it is?
Try to maintain an open mind. I mean, I don't know open-mindedness that we're necessarily gonna have an impact, but just telling people that, you know, try to think about things in more depth than they necessarily would. It's okay. I guess I would say it's okay not to have opinions on things. I think
new information is scary sometimes is another thing.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be careful about information, but you should try to consider all information you have available if it's reliable in any judgments you make. And try to avoid sweeping statements. Like the reason why, like we did this thing on Trump lies, right? And he basically shoots from the hip and makes a lot of like sweeping statements. Now, actually, some of them sometimes are general enough that they could be true. And it's kind of like you have to think about like, is this true? It's like partly true. You know,
dogs are white.
Yeah. Some dogs are white, right? And what does white really mean?
Well, I think that we did a fairly good job of making our worst episode ever suck as little as possible.
Yeah. Hopefully.
I think it was, I enjoyed it. So that's all that matters, I guess.
So nuance is good. It's okay not to know. I think that's the one takeaway. Stories can be gray. Most things are gray. Everything in life is a trade-off, almost everything. And it's not perfectly one way or perfectly the other way.
Yeah,
most
trade-off.
Things are somewhere in between.
Trade-off, cause and effect. It's not just that one force is good and one force is bad, but also that, and sometimes, in most instances, things that are connected because when you take one thing away, it affects the other thing. So it's just, it's all tangled up. You can't really say like, we need more of this because it's just, you know, this whole place is an ecosystem, you know, everything about it, including economies and politics and everything.
This is the thing I hate about modern movies. Now I'm really sounding like a curmudgeon, but but like superhero movies and stuff, the villains are always just like pure evil and not driven by rationality. Where in reality, villains were rational.
Though.
Like they were acting within maybe a skewed framework. Like the Nazis were operating in a very skewed framework. They saw the world like through different lenses and they thought the world, but from their perspective, they were being rational.
Yeah.
which is not true of like super villain movies and stuff like that. They generally are just like evil because they enjoy it or something. They're just sadistic. I mean, most, mm-hmm. and there are sadistic people, but most villains have a story and it has to make sense, mm-hmm. right? And they have, most villains, including the Nazis, thought they were the good guys, which is bizarre, yep. right? Like, but they thought they were the good guys. Villains well, a story, have to be thinking they're the good guys.
Yeah, stories are not representative sense. Of what's actually happening. Stories are a series of words which are placed on top of what's happening to contextualize things for whatever purpose that is. But there's combinations of words to paint whatever picture you want. So that's why Nazi Germany happened, because they painted themselves as the good guys and they painted the Jewish people as the bad guys. And they said, we got to get rid of these people. But it was not true. It was just a bunch of words.
Yep.
It's just a bunch of words. So, yeah, that's so that I guess the takeaway is, stories are overrated. Nuance is underrated. None of it's bad, but there's a time and place for all of it.
Yeah, so it's hard to cling to uncertainty, but try.
Try to cling to uncertainty like Hamlet. Yeah. We wish Hamlet. You better. We wish
well,
you better luck
not.
Than Hamlet.
He didn't end up so well, but
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for your support. If you want to help us out, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That is so helpful. We actually got some amazing, there was this amazing review that we got this week that I thought summed up our podcast so well. I think it was J.D. Griley was the name of the person. I think I thought it was a guy because it started with J.D., but it could have been a girl. I just thought it summed up the podcast so succinctly. So I just,
what did J.D. say?
They stood up for the podcast in light of the last couple reviews were negative because it was like, oh, this podcast is just an echo chamber for Julian's pessimistic views of society. And he thinks we should all just be roaming hunter-gatherers. And I was like, what? No, I don't. Like, that's just preposterous. Why would they take that away from any episode we've done? And this J.D. Griley person defended us and they were like, no, this is a great podcast because they have like really good conversations and Julian is just like eager to learn and Andrew's like this vast, like intelligent, you know, fax machine person. And, you know, he just was raving about how much, I keep saying he, but it could have been a girl. They were raving about how much they are enjoying it. So I thought that was really sweet.
Awesome.
But yeah, so leave a review if you'd like. Those are very helpful. And you can follow us on Twitter if you want. I'm at Julian Was Here. Andrew is at Mars Raider. And we do these every Monday. And we always have a good time. So I hope you're having a good time too. And yeah, we'll see you guys next Monday. Have a great week.
Thanks very much.